Welcome, everyone, to episode 271 of Some Like It, Scott. I'm your host, Scott Shelton, and this week we're talking about the feature directorial debut of an actor who has a special place in our hearts here at Some Like It, Scott. That is Dev Patel, his action thriller, Monkey Man. With me to discuss Monkey Man, I have my co-host, Scott Harvey. Scott, how are you doing today? What do you think of our boy, all grown up from the newsroom, Dev Patel?
Yeah, jail changed him. Jail changed Neil Sandpat, as we all know, and this is the path that it has led him down.
He started with Bigfoot, and he ended up as arguably maybe Bigfoot himself as the Monkey Man. Who knows?
Many more newsroom references coming for all of the copious fans out there like us. I'm good, Scott. I have seen now three movies in the last 3 weeks, so cinema.
An infinite increase on rate of movies watched versus the prior 4 to 5 weeks. At least for me, it has been.
Yes, exponential increase for sure. And so that has been good. And it's nice to be back at the theater. Civil War, I saw over this past weekend. I'm looking forward to talking about that one with you next weekend, because it's definitely been one of the more talked about movies this year.
Oh, really? No one talking about it on my timeline. Don't know what you're referring to.
I sense the
people having very normal conversations about that film.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when the first trailer came out, I was kind of like, yeah, it's going to be one of those movies. You could kind of already tell. But it'll be an interesting one to talk about. But I'm interested to talk about Monkey Man with you as well.
Yeah. It's I feel like it's been we're a little bit behind schedule in quotation marks with movies. I think for the whole year, probably just in general. I still have seen like fewer than 10 2023 movies or 2024 movies. I saw more than 10 2023 movies, I assure you, everyone. See top 10 of 2023 episode. But maybe we're starting to ramp back up. I'm interested in seeing movies that I missed now. So we're like trending in the right direction, I feel like. So I don't know.
Yeah. And I was looking to like some of the indie movies like that you saw last year at the New York Film Festival.
Yeah.
They're getting dates now. Like Hitman is going to be out in July, I think. I think Janet Planet is also coming out in July.
Is it actually July? Did they change it? Because I thought it was, they originally were saying June.
Maybe it was June. Maybe I just mixed that up. But anyway, it has a date on it. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to some of those movies coming out in the coming weeks as well, because those were on my list last year and I've kind of haven't heard much about them until now.
Yeah, Hitman coming to a Netflix streaming service near you June 7th.
June, okay, great.
Yeah, that was a fun film. I think I mentioned it in the New York Film Festival like episode that we did at the time, but that was one of my favorite films of the festival last year. So to get to rewatch that, you know, in a couple months' time, I'm excited to see how it aged outside of the festival environment, because I saw it on like the third row. Not the most ideal row to have seen that movie on, but really cool stuff.
I'm hoping I can see it in theaters because, you know, it's a Linklater. So I always want to
support
him, but I'll watch it however I can get it.
Yeah, I feel like it's a candidate for someone like Aperture.
Yeah,
I know you're not that close to Aperture, but maybe.
I will drive 30 minutes to see the new Richard Linklater movie. Don't worry.
Texas Rick, let's go. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Well, not quite Texas Rick, the film we're talking about today, but you know, a film with a cultural background all its own. As already mentioned, today's episode, we're reviewing Monkey Man, co-written, directed, and starring Dev Patel. Monkey Man charts the revenge tale of an unnamed protagonist called Kid, played by Patel, whose mother was murdered when he was a small child by a politician, Baba Shakti, played by Makaran Deshpande, and the chief of police, Rana Singh, played by Sikandar Kher, from the nearby fictional Indian city of Yatana, when they massacred the local village to acquire their land, killing Dev Patel's mother, so with Kid's mother and many of the villagers that they were friends with. When Kid is older and eking out a brutal living in the underground boxing world of Yatana, he begins to plot his revenge against Baba and Rana, finagling his way into a kitchen job at the high-end brothel run by Rana's wife and frequented by Rana and Baba, and forming alliances with people at the brothel to orchestrate his revenge. Scott, I'll stop there and ask simply, did this action-heavy tale of revenge spark something new in this oft-treaded genre, or did Kid chart the same course as many ill-advised revenge seekers in the past?
Yeah, I mean, when the trailer came out, you know, everyone started comparing this to John Wick. I think it's only natural nowadays, And going into it, I was like, you know, is this really going to be a John? Are people just saying that because it's a revenge movie, right? And like John Wick is the trendy.
Yes. You know. They were, in fact, just saying that because it was trendy, I think.
Well, a little bit. But also, they literally mentioned John Wick in this movie. Like, literally, John Wick is referenced.
Yeah.
But I think on the whole, agree with you that this movie is maybe trying to do something a little bit different. Yet at the same time, I couldn't help while watching this movie but think about all of the things that John Wick does right that I think this movie doesn't really do right. And, you know, obviously the action we know in John Wick is the showcase and it's spectacular and there's no impeaching that. But I think what takes those movies to an even higher level is the world building, the characters. You know, particularly in the last John Wick movie, the litany of characters, colorful characters that you have is, you know, one of the big draws of that movie, in my opinion. And I think you can find that throughout the John Wick world. I think that this movie is lacking a lot of those factors around the action, which is well done, but, you know, not as wall to wall, maybe as you're going to expect, not as wall to wall as you get in a John Wick movie.
If you go into the film thinking that you're going to watch a John Wick movie, you're not going to get John Wick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for one, Dev Patel is interested in sort of a more political film, I guess, like making a little bit of political commentary with.
I'd say more than a little bit.
Yeah. But, you know, making some political statements, you know, he wants to talk about sort of religion being this opiate used by people like. Is it Baba, the sort of spiritual leader guy who is a huckster?
Who is a guy who is modeled, at least in some people's view, very closely to the current Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi. But this film, for that reason, will most likely, even though it is set in a fictional Indian city, will probably never be released in India.
Yeah, I'd suspect not. But, you know, there's some commentary about that. There are some transgender characters that appear in the movie who are being oppressed. And the movie, you know, wants to represent them and speak out or depict sort of the persecution of those people. But none of it really comes together for me. In the end, I think the action is the sole draw in this movie for me. I think a couple of the big problems for me would be, number one, the pacing of the movie. I think that this movie, you know, it has some action. It starts out, we get a little bit of storytelling, we get into the action, and then there's like a pretty long sequence in the middle of the movie. And this is after he meets up with the transgender spiritual type guy. I don't really know exactly what his title is, but
basically the head of a local, I don't know, monastery, temple, yeah. Like a temple type place.
Yeah. And once that scene happens, it kind of devolves into this long sequence of him like hallucinating and going through this sort of reckoning with the trauma that happened to him in the past. And I honestly zoned out at this part of the movie because it wasn't really that engaging. And part of the reason why it wasn't that engaging is my other main qualm with the movie, which is the use of the flashbacks in the storytelling, which I thought did not work on multiple levels. I mean, first of all, you start off and there's a little bit of a flashback, but then we're now following Dev Patel and he's on a mission, but we don't really understand what his mission is, who he's trying to, you know,
or frankly, how long he's been trying to do it already.
Yeah. We don't understand any of that. But then, you know, we get some more flashbacks weaved in and it starts to become clear. Okay. These people killed his mom, right? Like anyone can put that together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet the flashbacks continue again through this long sequence that I'm talking about where we now have to see the entire event play out. You know, involving these people coming, trying to take the land, the mother being tortured and killed. Even though we already understand that that is what has happened, and it feels like a real waste of screen time to, you know, spend on that event that we already really, really know what happened. And I don't feel like depicting it in, you know, in its entirety in this sequence really served any purpose in the movie at the end of the day. And so I had a problem with that. I think the movie's momentum kind of comes to a screeching halt when this sequence arrives. And then, you know, we have a big action climax, but then it also ends kind of abruptly too. I think the pacing is just a little bit jagged throughout this movie. Maybe speaking to Dev Patel as a first time filmmaker, I don't know. And then, you know, his performance, I think, is solid. You know, he has a lot of charisma. Dev Patel does. We've noted that in many of his roles in the past.
Yeah.
He's more than capable of being a leading man in this type of movie and any other movie. But I think he can only take it so far with the issues that I've already mentioned and with the fact that there's really no other interesting characters in this movie. I didn't really find the villains very interesting. They're pretty one note, one dimensional. The sidekick character that shows up, Alfonso, he, you know, hangs around for a little bit, but then he kind of just goes away.
I think this is actually one of the main, not to get like too much into stuff that's like not on the screen, but like,
yeah.
I think the characters is where the biggest sort of like issue is in the movie for me. Cause I actually think that the characters, the pacing, it all sort of ties back to the same issue. The like, clearly this film was meant to be like an hour plus longer than it was, like in its original form. Right. Like there's all these characters. Alfonso is one of them. You mentioned like he disappears from the film after the first act. Like, yeah, he's like there in a couple scenes after, but he disappears. There's this woman that he meets in the brothel.
Oh, yeah. Like
Zita, I think is her name. Yeah. Maybe like she seems like she's supposed to be an important character and she is not.
They have like, one scene together when they're like when he's like sitting on the curb. And that's like basically
They have that scene together, and then obviously their paths cross like two more times in the film. Yeah. But like, you get the vibe when they meet that there could be some romantic interest. I'm not even really commenting on that, but like she's supposed to be some character which he gravitates toward as not an anchor, but as like some sort of like emotional connection to like everything that's happened, because she is someone who's also sort of suffering at the hands of these people who he has a great enmity toward, and not that they sort of team up or work together, but that there's some connection there, romantic or otherwise. That's not really what I'm talking about, but that's like, there's that. There's, I think that there's other examples too of it too. Like even some of the people, other people from the brothel or outside of the brothel, like sort of at the boxing ring, like, there's threads here, right? There's like the kid or whatever. Like there's threads here, which is like clearly there's meant to be more meat on a lot of these like sort of secondary and tertiary bones, so to speak. And the film doesn't deliver on that. I don't think that means that I don't think the film is worse for that. I'm not saying the film would have been better if it were an hour longer, but I believe the final product is just a sort of, it suffers from the fact that it was intended to be a much longer movie. And it probably got to a better form. It very well might have gotten to a better form in the final way that it was, because maybe all the other stuff, getting to know these other characters more and getting a better connection with them, didn't actually make the film any better. It just made it an hour longer. But it does create this sort of weird, really strange pacing and odd choices around characters that I agree. Like, it sort of makes the film punch less hard than the action sequences might make you think.
And from my understanding about the production history of the movie too, that would make sense.
A total disaster.
Because it was a total disaster. Jordan Peele had to basically come in and save this movie under his...
So it was a Netflix... So it started as a Netflix film. Yeah. It was getting made right as the coronavirus pandemic started. That shut down the production. It almost completely... Like I think the cinematographer and like some other production crew members quit or didn't return after the production shut down from COVID. And then... Essentially, like they did manage to finish filming the film at the end of 2020, I believe, on like a small island in Indonesia, where they were able to set up production and follow like whatever the appropriate coronavirus pandemic codes were at the time. But then Netflix, I think for maybe obvious reasons that we've already sort of hinted at around like the whole political skew of it, like really wasn't interested in the film anymore. And so we're trying to offload it. Jordan Peele saw the film, was really excited about it, and then acquired it for, I think, well under $10 million, which is much less than the actual production budget of the movie. I think the production budget of the movie was like probably closer to like 20 to 30, or based on what Netflix paid for it. And then obviously Peele ends up getting this thing a theatrical release at Universal because that's where his production relationship is. And it sort of like ends up this sort of like rags to riches story for this film, because it probably would have just died in obscurity on Netflix. It was a crazy, but Dev Patel like broke his hand while filming the movie.
I think all of that serves to support your theory there, that there's definitely a longer cut of this movie that probably exists, and which may, I don't want to say solve, because like you said, it may not solve them, but which clearly, reflects that there are things that had to be cut. And that's why there are these gaps, these holes, these areas of the movie, which just feel like something is missing.
Yeah. And there's certain points because I sort of feel the exact same way. I think I frankly was really enjoying the film for the first 45 minutes. I thought the whole first act of the film, so to speak, like really worked.
Yeah, I think that's the best part of the movie. Yeah,
I was vibing with the sort of the atmosphere, and again, I really think that we shouldn't compare this movie to John Wick, because in a lot of, I understand why the comparison.
Think they want you to, though, just because again,
from a marketing perspective. Maybe, but like, I don't think Dev Patel would describe the movie as like a John Wick like, to say the least. But like, there's basically no gunplay in this movie, right? It's mostly hand to hand combat, which makes sense because that's a lot of what like, these sort of more action heavy like Bollywood type movies would be like. And I'll be honest, like I really felt like the second half of the film felt, I know this is like maybe super cliche, but it felt more like a Rocky film. Like there's like a training montage, there's like a final fight in a ring, basically, right? Like obviously I'm being a bit hyperbolic when I say that, but in many respects, it felt more like a sports film at the end of the film, like a boxing movie towards the end, and less like a John Wick thriller type. Obviously, the emotional stakes are maybe a little bit different, and the cultural element and political commentary on it is much more grandiose than you'd see in any of those movies. But I just really felt like after the first act, the film lost its pacing to the point you already made, which I totally agree with. And I had a hard time connecting with a lot of the stuff happening in the second act. I don't know if it's like I'm not familiar with a lot of the cultural trappings of what they're exploring, or if it just wasn't told in a way that captured my attention versus how it could have been. And maybe that is a sort of like look and feel of a first time director type thing that you were talking about. I think that I could definitely see that. And then it was harder for me to get reinvested at the end of the film in the third act for those reasons, because you have these big showdowns. And I think that you get a pretty good, or at least viscerally, I had better stakes in the big fight with the police chief, Rana. Like that fight, I think, was probably the best fight in the film.
But I do have to say, like, I'm not somebody who like will shy away from like, okay, go all the way with the violence, whatever you want to do. We're getting revenge, we're doing all that, like, woohoo, I'm rooting for you, Dev Patel kid, whatever. But like, when he kills him, like, he is beating him, and then he will beat him, and then
he gave him a beating.
He drags his head back up and beats him some more, and then he picks his head back up and beats him some more. I'm like, okay, enough. Like, it just got to be a little bit too much for me. Like, I felt like the movie was reveling in the brutality of it all, which...
Well, I definitely think the film, generally speaking, is leaning into that aspect of it.
It is, but that moment just, I don't know, it struck me the wrong way. Like, again, almost like it was not like, oh, hey, we're trying to depict this violence because this is how violence actually is. But it was like, oh, yeah, we want you to be like, woohoo, pumping your fist because this guy is just getting beaten, revived.
I mean, when he punches the guy's punch away, like that was I mean, yeah, that was when we were cheering in the theater. I was like, right, oh, yeah, boy, that's a good shot. But it was strange to go from that and then to like the final scene of the film where he and Baba, the political figure, have this confrontation in the penthouse of this brothel overlooking the city. And like there's this sort of bigger conversation, that sort of showdown, like the film did not properly connect me to like the enmity between those two characters. Like, I think we all know that this political figure was involved and like the primary driver of why this happened. But just because they spend so much time showing you the flashback where you see the police chief,
Rana, yeah.
Yeah, with his mother and killing his mother and burning his mother alive or whatever. Like, the visceral connection of like, oh, this guy's got to go is like not quite the same. And I think because so much of like Act 2 and Act 3 are chopped up, I don't feel like that the big bad of the film is like fully established in a way to get me like quite as invested in the showdown between the two of them, yeah, as the penultimate scene right before it. And because of that, and what you're describing earlier with the way the film abruptly ends at the end of that confrontation where, you know, the politician figure is dead and it's kind of unclear exactly what the future holds for Kid, whether he's going to also die there because he suffered some wounds, mm-hmm, as well, or if he's going to get arrested or something like that. Like, not that that really matters very much, but it's like the abrupt ending of the film on a moment where like the level of catharsis you're achieving in that moment, at least in my experience, was lower than the one you achieved right before. I think it's fine to abruptly end your movie like that, but you want that abrupt ending to be like the climactic point of the film, not sort of like the like sort of secondary come down emotionally. And I think that is where ultimately it fell a little bit short for me in the final act of the film, because that's the moment where he tries to tie the cultural significance of what's happening back, yeah, to it. And because I didn't really connect with that in the second act of the film, you know, it didn't land. So unfortunately, I think that the film maybe would have had a stronger impact if those two scenes had literally just been reversed. I understand why they're not, but that's why ultimately the first act is the best part. The second act, I don't connect with them. The third act is like a little bit of high, a little bit of low mixed in together.
Yeah. And there's this whole, you know, there's the mythology of the Monkey Man, which I think is like half baked. There's, yeah, the religious aspect of it, which again, I can go as far as, okay, this Baba guy is like using religion to justify.
Yeah. He's like a nationalist, right? Like the whole notion that this, yeah, guy is essentially, you know, politically maybe it doesn't really matter all that much, but the notion is that this guy's like, you know, an ultra nationalist who's like using like religious fervor to gain a following and sort of exploiting that to his benefit. Right, which is a lot of people's criticisms of Narendra Modi, the Indian prime minister.
But then there's like the very, very end, like when, as you described, the kid is like, you know, maybe about to die, I don't know. And there's like this, they keep coming back to this like voiceover. I don't remember if it's his mother or him or whatever. And it's saying like, I don't remember exactly even what it's saying, but it's like praise to God or glory to God or something like that.
I think it's his mother telling, or it's either his mother or like someone from his town telling the story of the Monkey Man.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I assume it's his mother, but it may not have been.
I was just so confused at that being the ending of the movie. Like, what are we supposed to take from that? Like, is he a god? Like, what? I don't understand. Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it's just yet another Lisan al Gaib, you know, myth, and sure, he has fulfilled the prophecy or whatever. But I just thought invoking like the religious part of it was kind of weird when the whole time the movie has been like, oh, you know, this guy is, you know, this religious figure is the problem.
Yeah, I think the way that I read it, which I think what you're saying also is a worthy question, the way I read it was more like, you know, Kid is sort of in his last moments, maybe before he dies, right? Or in this like these really emotionally intense moments of he's finally achieved his revenge. What he's thinking about is like the religious devotion of his town and his mother and his family when the people who were their undoing or who literally murdered them are these sort of like devout religious nationalists. And, you know, it this whole notion of like, what's the, to me, it's almost like he's reflecting on like, what is the right way for religion almost to like be used? Like I don't feel like I'm quite voicing exactly what I'm thinking, but it's like, I feel like there's some sort of like
two the right sides. Way is by beating these people to a pulp.
That's why right way is not the right way to describe it. But I think it's this notion of like, and again, maybe it's not some like big ethical question, right? It's like, there's people who are, you know, followers of Hanuman or these people who believe in these sort of religious tales of Hanuman, who's able to, you know, take vengeance and I'm forgetting the story now off the top of my head, to be honest. So I apologize, probably not quite getting this right. But, you know, who is this religious figure? Not that Kid is a religious figure, but is he fulfilling this prophecy? Is he doing this thing that like good religious people, like this sort of story that has been like fulfilled over time and over time again, is this happening as like people against people who abuse those sort of like religious inclinations and notions and tendencies? Because I think that it also sort of is worked in with the people at the temple earlier in the film who also aid him in sort of his sort of assault on the brothel at the end of the film. You know, that's not Hanuman people, that they're worshiping. They're worshiping a sort of deity or religious figure within like the pantheon that is a god who is a representation of, you know, half a man, half woman. So like half Shiva, half Parvati. And, you know, they're being persecuted even though they are religious followers because they don't fit into this mold of religiosity that's being, you know, put out by, you know, Baba and his followers. It's not mainstream enough or whatnot. And I think that he's sort of dying thinking about like, what does it mean to be like, to believe in these types of myths or religious tales, and do those stories inspire us to do bad things? Right. He's not thinking those thoughts, but I think that's like, that is what the film is making me think about as the film concludes, because he's just killed this person who is using stories like Hanuman, right? Like these other things to whip up a religious following among his like sort of political base.
Yeah. I mean, I think I could maybe get there, but not based on the evidence of this movie. I think
I don't disagree with that.
Speculation and extrapolation from,
I mean, it's clearly like some sort of like personal ponderings of, I would assume it's like a deeply personal pondering of Dev Patel's as well. Yeah. I can only assume so.
I can assume that the whole movie is, you know, very personal to him.
Yeah, he's often wanted to infiltrate a high-end brothel and kill a police figure and religious politician.
Yeah, but on the whole, it's a missed opportunity, I think, for something, you know, for it to either be something more resonant in that political department, or for it to just be a romp, right? Just be a straight up, you know, action, wall to wall action and revenge flick.
More like a John Wick or like the original.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about our thoughts on the film overall, but maybe it's worth talking a little bit more specifically about some of the performances. You mentioned you found Dev Patel very charismatic and very fitting for the role, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about what you thought about his performance overall, because something we probably don't talk about enough is the sort of multi-hyphenate roles of like writing, directing, acting in your film. Not too many people are doing that. I mean, Clint Eastwood's doing it. You know, people Dev Patel's age are not typically positioning themselves in this way, in this type of movie. And it's a pretty Herculean effort. I think it's probably clear what he's most experienced and comfortable with is the acting. I think you see that as he works through some of the other aspects of the roles that he found himself in. But what did you think of his performance more specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's good in the movie. He didn't blow me away. It wasn't a, you know, legendary action, hero type performance. I think it's about what I expected. I like Dev Patel as an actor. Again, I think he's capable of leading the movie. I think he did lead the movie as much as he could with all the flaws that we're talking about in the movie. But I guess I still wanted a little bit more to this character. You know, we obviously know that he wants revenge, and that's sort of his single-minded quest. And clearly there needed to be something more, whether it's, you know, why he feels a certain way about these marginalized groups, or maybe more of the backstory, right? Like you're alluding to, Scott, of how long has this been going on, right? Because all we know is this happened in childhood, and now
been trying to infiltrate this brothel for years? Has he been gathering, you know, evidence? Like, you know, at what point did he learn about all these people and their connections to this place?
Yeah,
there's something there, right? That could have been leveraged to build more of the sort of straightforward romp version of the film that we're talking about. Not that that's necessarily a better movie, just it really is very in media race of his like revenge journey. Yeah, and doesn't fill you in on what happened before.
Right. Without all the details, you're kind of just left with him to carry the role using only his charisma.
Yeah.
And you know, he does the best that he can, but I think just the weight of the rest of the shortcomings in the movie overcome him, and the fact, you know, that there isn't really any other performance or character that you can hang your hat on and say, you know, oh well, he played off this person well, right? Like that brought out some new shades in his performance. You don't even really get that, because, you know, even Alfonso, like we said, one of the characters that he has more interaction with, goes away like halfway through the movie. And by the way, I love the scene where he's like escaping, and after he has tried to kill Rana the first time, mm-hmm. and he's getting away and he's in the parking garage or whatever, and the guys are chasing after him, and he jumps into Alfonso's like auto rickshaw type thing.
Yeah.
And
moped like vehicle.
Yeah. Starts driving away, and the guys are shooting at him. They are actually chasing after him, shooting after him. This is a place where there's guns used in the movie. And he decides to stop and make sure that there's time for Alfonso to...
He's just looking out for his boy, you know?
Yeah, but that was kind of a crazy moment to me, because he could have easily lost his life in that moment.
Yeah.
But I digress. Anyway, I think those are all the reasons why I try Dev Patel. Try as he might, like, he can only do so much.
Yeah, I like Dev in this role. I don't really blame him at his performance as why it went astray at any part. I felt he was very committed. Like, I felt it was ultimately a very committed performance. And I think when you have a film that's going to be as visceral and physically brutal as the film ultimately is and wants to be, you have to go pretty far, I think, to sell that. And I think he's able to do that from start to finish. Right, he's able to make you believe that he's out there in the ring, like just being the absolute like goat and just getting the shit kicked out of him and beat out of him in these fights, you know, week in, week out.
Another character that we haven't even talked
Charlton
about.
Copley's character.
Yeah, Charlton Copley's character, who, you know, again, there was a seed of something there, maybe, but like he's not in long stretches of the movie.
Yeah. Unclear if there's a version of this film that has him in a bunch more scenes, because he's sort of the proprietor of this underground boxing ring that kid works is a weird way to describe it, fights in, gets beat up in.
He's the Washington Generals of this boxing league, right? Yeah. His job is just to lose.
Yeah, to lose, and to lose badly,
so that everyone can win their bets.
Exactly. So it's so funny, because it's almost like, it almost feels like a WWE type thing. Like people are like betting, but people are betting on like the fights, and he's not really fighting. He's out there to just sort of get kicked around and beat up pretty badly. I think that scene c- comes back around in this in the third act of the film and is a little satisfying to see
it's
him.
It's a little funny, yeah.
It's certainly a little funny.
One hit, yeah.
Just knocks that guy out cold, which was pretty funny. And then having to fight the guy who's like two or three times his side, and Charlotte Copley's character gives the guy a baseball bat with nails.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very visceral stuff going on in the film and the fight scenes. But I think he sells that from the beginning, right? Like, he's out there getting punched around, getting beaten around, and you believe that. And so when he goes in there and it builds up to his first attempt to kill the police chief, Rana, in the brothel, and you sort of have your first set of chase scenes, and then in the third act of the film, you know, sort of full-blown action scenes where he's fighting people. It had properly laid the foundation for the visceral nature of the role. And I think Dev has this really sort of almost intangible charisma, this charm that totally works on me. I think that his sort of tall lankiness of his performance, like, he's able to hold himself and compose himself on the screen in a way that I think is it just really endears him to the audience. At least it does for me. And the way that he sort of interacts with, frankly, like a bit of a stooge like Alfonso, and also at the same time as, you know, with these sort of outcasts of society at the temple, and, you know, this in the fleeting moments where you see him interact with the woman from the brothel, like, I think you there is like something really special there in the way that he's able to navigate those, you know, conversations and relationships in a way that you sort of get why these people would trust him, or not that he's some like massive force of will, but just like he's very approachable and easy to get along with in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that that's sort of a special ability that I feel like he's brought to so many different roles. I mean, I was thinking a lot about the Green Knight watching this film, because, like, obviously they're very different roles, but they're, you know, two of his few leading roles that I think have had wide releases. He's obviously been the lead in other movies, other smaller movies as well, but they seem like on paper such different roles, but there's a warmth to them even in their sort of like, even in the coldness of the movies, because I think they're both very, like, Green Knight and this film are very cold films, but there's a warmth that he brings almost isolated around his figure that really serves him well. And so I really enjoyed the way that the little aspects of the role, even though I might have been less impressed and a little bit lost in some of the bigger picture things, but he was sort of always an anchor for me to go back to, even when I felt like a little bit at sea and other parts of the film and what it was trying to access.
Yeah. Maybe he should try a comedy like that. Maybe that's a place where he could, you know, use some of his natural.
Sure.
Charisma and,
yeah, and a workplace comedy with a little bit of political commentary.
Sure.
Maybe even a limited series TV mm-hmm. show type role, and I don't know, I feel like he could work really well in like a newsroom, maybe.
There it is.
Yeah,
we got back there eventually. Yeah.
I didn't know if that's actually where you were going, so I took it all the way. Yeah, there
I wasn't, but
so okay, yeah, so you want Dev in a comedy. I'm down for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, let's see him do something, you know, different. We have seen him do two very intense parts between this and.
You want the Dev Patel rom-com?
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying about him having this sort of warmth about him, and so I think that could be used very effectively in a rom-com. So.
Yeah, well, I think the only other film that he currently has, at least from what I can tell, on the calendar is a film called Rabbit Trap, and. It's this really warm romantic comedy that's for some reason being called a psychological horror film on its description. So I don't know if we're going
to
be getting what we're asking.
You hate
for
to
here.
See that, but now I'm, you know, I'm just spitballing here because I want to see Dev succeed. I want the best for him.
Yeah, I'm this film. Ultimately, it's not like this film was like a failure.
No,
right. No. Ultimately, like it, you know. At least for the business that Jordan Peele made of it, like, he bought the film off Netflix for $10 million or less than $10 million. The film's made like $25 million at the box office.
Critically, pretty well received.
Critically, yeah, decently well received. So I think that there's some future there for him. You know, whether or not he has other stories he wants to tell. Like, obviously, this is a story he wanted to tell and felt very passionate about telling. You know, whether he has that itch to continue to do that with other projects, and if studios want him to do that for other projects, I think is probably a different question. But there's almost certainly something there. And now that we're talking about comedy, Scott, I think we forgot that he was in The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Not that he was the lead, but...
Yeah, and he was delightful in it.
Sure. I mean, he does have, you know, he has the energy to be in a Wes Anderson film.
Oh,
even most, though he hasn't been
in a feature, yeah.
In a feature, yeah. Any other thing you wanted to say about Dev?
No.
All right, other members of the cast. You mentioned Charlton Copley. You know, there is certainly a lot of there is a pretty long cast list of other people, mostly sort of actors who are probably, I'd imagine, I haven't done my homework totally on this, but I imagine who are more famous in India, who probably are, you know, more famous Bollywood stars than they would be in Hollywood films. But did any particular performances or characters stick out to you besides Kid?
Unfortunately, no. Again, this is one of my major issues with the movie. Again, I think with some of them, you can see the seeds of something in their performance or in the character. We haven't also talked about the woman who kind of like is the boss.
Queenie. Played by Ashwini Kalsakar.
Again, set up sort of in the beginning, like this is going to be a big sort of intimidating foil for Kid, and it doesn't really turn out that way.
The film almost sets itself up, and it almost a little bit executes itself like this, is like a tiered boss structure. Like, how many of these people he have to like burn through to get to the big bad, right? And all these people make appearances in the final act of the movie to varying extents. This person is ended, shall we say, by, I believe it's the prostitute, right? The woman.
I don't even remember honestly what happened with that character.
She makes an appearance and starts to like shoot all of the temple people. Like, you know when the temple people charge?
Oh yeah. No, it's the character that the Sita, female character that goes nowhere. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Very unsatisfying. Well, very satisfying death, but like a fleeting appearance.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's a missed opportunity. You know, Charlton Copley, he kind of hams it up in his couple of moments.
He does. He really
Alfonso
does.
Goes nowhere. The two villains, again, are just very roughly drawn sketches of characters. So, you know, in a different movie, maybe he could have done more here and fleshed some of these out. But, it does kind of feel like that boss structure almost at times, which doesn't really lend itself to a lot of character depth or development.
In some ways though, I think it kind of does, doesn't it? Like, I feel like if you better the first act sort of sets up who all the bosses would be, right? The problem is it just diverts you for the second act, like away from all that, as he goes through his sort of like training religious moment where he has these sort of, I don't even know, hallucinogenic experiences.
Maybe it just feels that way, yeah, because the movie just...
It diverts the film.
Didn't spend the time on that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Because it sets it up, and then, like, there's a version of the third act where he individually hunts these people down as opposed to having this sort of one big shootout.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily right or wrong the way they did it. It's just, like, there is a version of that that sort of executes on what it sets up a little differently.
If there were more of those like peaks throughout the movie, then maybe, you know, that would be something. But instead, it's like they all save it for the end and kind of smash it all together.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of why the fight with the police chief is the most, you know, satisfying in air quotes, because that's the relationship that's built up the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think with that, we can probably enter wrap up, unless you have any other lingering thoughts you want to air.
Not really. There's some awful needle drops in this movie. Like when they dropped Roxanne, when you first get introduced to the Sita character, literally the most on the nose choice that you could possibly have. And there was another one too that I rolled my eyes at, and I can't really remember what it is now, but But yeah, it was Dev thought he cooked with that, but he didn't really. So that was tough.
All right, Scott. Well, it sounds like we know it's not going to be your favorite scene or moment then, but why don't you tell us what is your favorite scene or moment from Monkey Man?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the bathroom fight scene with Rana, the first, you know, fight that they have there, is pretty well done. I mean, that's where it is brutal, like we talked about, but yeah. I thought it was not a gratuitous level of it. And so I appreciated that. It reminded me of the a more intense version, perhaps, of the Henry Cavill versus Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Henry Cavill cocking his biceps.
Yeah.
In Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty well done sequence. And, you know, it leads into the long chase that I kind of alluded to. And a lot of that stuff is pretty well done. It uses the environment and everything well. I will say the one problem with the action is there's a lot of cutting. There's a lot of jump cut. It is very stylized, and he tries to do some stuff like go hardcore Henry first person at one point, which was a strange choice. It's really only for a few seconds, but again, I think it's kind of a first-time filmmaker emptying his bag of tricks. Maybe a little bit too early.
Yeah, I didn't talk about this, but I'm glad you actually brought it up, because that actually was one of my bigger issues. The guy that I saw this film with, a friend from work, and he was like, oh man, that action was so intense. And I'm like, I kind of felt like there were large stretches of the action where I had literally no idea what was going on.
I mean, yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing. I mean, that was the thing last year, Scott, and I don't think I fully appreciated this until my second time viewing the John Wick films, is that like the marvel of those films is that everything is so clear what's happening in every action scene of that movie. Like even the first, like from the first one to the fourth one, right? You understand all of the action that's happening on the screen. It's clearly displayed. A lot of the scenes, like there's no, like a lot of these scenes don't even have cuts in them, right? Like in the action, like they are like beautifully choreographed, balletic fights Keanu Reeves,
and that's Chad Stahelski's, you know, experience as being a choreographer before he ever directed a film.
Sure, but it's just like that is the thing that like no other John Wick, like in air quotes, right, films that are like, whether or not they want to be, are being compared to John Wick. That is like the thing that like no other film, at least that I've seen, like really gets, is that like how do you stage these things where it doesn't look like a mess on the screen. And that's like a really high bar. Like it's not really meant to be like this big like criticism or like condemnation of the films. Cause I get it. Like these things are like super hard to stage, especially when the camera is as tight, to your point that you were making, like the camera is so often so tight to Dev Patel in this film. Like there's no way, like even if they didn't cut, there's like no way you'd be able to understand what was going on. Like it probably would be worse if they weren't editing, chopping it up. But because of the choices made there, and I sort of understand why they made those choices, because that makes it more visceral. Like you get the experience of like the sort of the desperation of him by doing that. I think that you do get some positive traits from making those choices, but it doesn't make for these like beautiful action set pieces in the film. Like again, I just sort of, I get why people are like so into like how hard the action hits in this movie. But for me, I'd much rather just be able to like have a better scope of what exactly is happening.
But no, understand what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I wasn't as high on the action in this film beyond like the sort of visceral emotions that it sort of is able to extract out of me as an audience member with it. And it was successful at doing that. It just,
but anyway,
it just,
that's my way of saying the bathroom scene was my favorite scene.
Yeah. But the bathroom scene was cool. You know, I did like that. Yeah, for me, it's going to be, it ironically, after all, that will be an action sequence as well. And that is the sort of second fight scene on the VIP floor with Rana at the end of the film. There's a sort of, going back to the like Dev Patel's performance here, like there's a almost like brazen confidence that he like struts around the VIP room with while he's fighting Rana, that just seems like so like, where did this come from? And that when I say that, you would think that maybe it's like a negative, that I'm saying that, but I think it just like so works that he has found his place through this sort of religious journey that he went on. Even if I didn't fully follow it, like it's clear he's found it. He's found his confidence in his ability to fight, punching harder, being faster, being more like, you know, just a better fighter than these people. And he sort of wears that confidence in such a charming is a weird way to describe it, but such an arresting way that I just loved it. I love the way that he sort of carried himself around that fight and how he ultimately sort of dismantled Rana and killed him. Super, super violent, like you were saying. But I think sort of everything leading up to that really worked for me in terms of it sort of showing the hero's journey of it all, right? From like where he started to where he finished. Unbelievable that he didn't just pull the trigger in the bathroom. Like, what was he doing? Just kill the guy. What is he even doing there?
Stage fright.
Yeah. But yeah, that was my favorite scene in the film. But the one you said as well is a close second for me. All right, out of 10, what are you giving Monkey Man?
5.3. It was a try, and you know, I still ride for Dev, but missed opportunity.
Yeah, similar ballpark for me. I'm at a 5.8. I think the highs of this, I mean, I do think that the first act, like if the movie stopped 45 minutes in and you asked me what I thought, I was like, this film rips. Like, it was a good movie. But yeah, just never was able to like fully recapture all of that in the final two thirds of the film.
Yeah.
But promising, I echo what you say. I still ride with Dev, and I'm excited for whatever he does next, whether it's solely in the acting department or if he's back behind the camera again as well. And with that, I think that should just about do it for our discussion of Monkey Man. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about casting for Edgar Wright's next project, as well as news about a potential Chris Farley biopic. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back for part two of today's episode of Some Like It, Scott. As mentioned before the break, Scott, you wanted to talk about Edgar Wright's next project, a Running Man remake?
Yeah, it's interesting that this news broke, and I guess we did already know that he was doing this, but that the news of the star of the film broke, which brought it back into the spotlight. Because like literally 2 days before this news came out, I happened to watch the original Running Man for another podcast that I do, the Roundtable. But
another podcast?
Oops, that just slipped out. No, but the Running Man, the original, of course, based on a Stephen King story, directed by Paul Michael Glazer, Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle from the 80s, about a man who was framed by this sort of propaganda state and made out to be a criminal and therefore thrown into this television game show called The Running Man, where he
does he have to run?
Flee. Yeah, he has to flee the stalkers, as they are known, which are these sort of very colorful American Gladiator style like assassins that are sent out into this battlefield basically to try and capture and kill the criminal. And honestly, it's not a very good movie. Maybe in the era it was, you know, appreciated, but it hasn't aged well. The action isn't very good. It was Schwarzenegger before he really learned how to fake act. So there's a lot of tough stuff in the movie. And watching the movie, I did think, honestly, this would make good fodder for a remake. Like, I don't say that about a lot of movies, I feel like, because I feel like most movies are just best left alone. But The Running Man is a movie I could see, you know, them doing a remake. Some of the ideas there could still be made relevant. And, you know, there's obviously a lot more that you can do nowadays in the action department.
It's so interesting that this was like sort of he hadn't learned to fake act yet, because this is like after Predator, after Conan, after all those films, right? After Terminator. It's not like this was like one of his early movies.
I mean, maybe it's just he's just bad at delivering dialogue in this movie. But
it's not the 90s yet. It's probably not like peak Arnold in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but Terminator 2, True Lies, like those are, I think, him at his peak. But,
Batman and Robin, of course.
Of course. But I actually enjoy Batman and Robin, but you can cut that out.
No, I mean, I enjoy it as much as the next person, but I don't know if...
Well, the next person probably doesn't enjoy it that much because it's one of the most reviled movies like ever made. But
no, I look, do I think it's a good movie? No, but I look, did I watch that as a teenager or kid and think it was funny? Sure. Yeah.
But anyway, Edgar Wright is remaking The Running Man. Of course, Edgar Wright, director of the Cornetto trilogy, Baby Driver, most recently Last Night in Soho. Yeah. And the Sparks Brothers, and he is now cast as his leading man in the Arnold role from the original, Glenn Powell. So obviously somebody that Scott and I are big fans of, really having a moment in the last couple of years, started with Top Gun Maverick, and of course he was in Anyone But You, and he's going to be in Twisters this summer. So
and Hitman and Hitman as well. He's gonna have a big summer between those two films.
Summer of Glenn. I'm here for it. But he is going to be cast.
We had Kinergy last summer. We got Glennergy this summer.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
He's going to be cast in the lead role in this Running Man remake. I'm very intrigued by this, Scott. You know, I wasn't a fan of Edgar Wright's last movie of Last Night in Soho, but otherwise I think he's made all good films and I could see him having an interesting take on this. And being able to do something pretty creative with it. Like, I think he'll bring something different than, you know, a standard act. Like if David Leitch or somebody like that just, you know, remade this movie.
Sure.
So it's a name that gets me interested. And yeah, Glenn Powell, he's a movie star. He has the juice to anchor a big action movie like this. We're going to see him do it in Twisters, like I said, but
is there a female lead in or main supporting role in The Running Man?
Yeah, well, in the original, she's played by Maria Conchita Alonso, and it's also not a great performance or great character, honestly. But I suspect they'll do something to beef it up.
I hear Sydney Sweeney's popular these days.
Well, they kind of already did a movie together, but. I know, right? Yeah, honestly, that's not what I'm hoping for in this role.
Honestly, I would not like that.
Yeah, I would not.
Look, but, if they want to run it back and do Daisy Edgar Jones, though, I'm all for it.
I mean, that again, we're going to see how they work together in Twisters. So who knows? Maybe that's a screen pairing.
Maybe it'll be Rachel Ziegler and she'll sing songs into the camera.
I don't know where that would fit into The Running Man, honestly, but... You know, Edgar Wright, do whatever you want, man. But I'm interested in this movie. I mean, I would already have been interested in it, but then Glenn Powell getting cast, I think is, you know, he's like, I'm going to go watch pretty much anything he does. So.
It does feel that way right now. And we like it. We like that a lot.
Over to you, Scott.
Yeah, for me, there was some news. I can't remember if it was earlier today or yesterday about a potential or last week. It all blurs together to me at this point. But there is currently a Chris Farley biopic in development. The first part of this news is that Paul Walter Hauser is set to play Chris Farley, which maybe it's like just it's super obvious casting. I think it's a great Paul Walter Hauser's
Hollywood's great, favorite chunky guy.
And he's great in these roles. Like he's able to he is able to produce in these roles where
he's doing the Mount Rushmore. He did Richard Jewell, Chris Farley. Who else is next?
I mean, he did. Not that this is a famous person, but he did like the person from Blackbird. He did the I, Tonya guy, right?
Sean, yeah. I mean, like Hall of Fame of like fat.
Oh, guys, sure. You know, Hall of Fame fat guys. Yeah, I'm sure he'll find the next one or whatever. But look, the casting, although maybe a little bit on the nose. I do feel like a positive. I'm excited about it. I think I've enjoyed Paul Walter Hauser in almost everything that he's ever done. And so I think that's cool. The part that took me a little bit more by surprise was who was attached to direct, because that person is Josh Gad. And I was like, what is Josh Gad doing directing a movie?
Yeah, I mean, I have to think that, you know, he's inspired by Chris Farley. Like, you know, a lot of comedians, comedy-focused actors, you know, probably grew up watching Chris Farley on SNL.
Josh, I just would have expected someone like Jonah Hill if it was going to be, like, you know, actor, comedians.
Maybe Jonah Hill's not interested in making a biopic, though. I mean, you know, his one film that he made, it was most definitely not a biopic, so.
Yeah, but like, has Josh Gad directed a film before? I mean, I'm just, if we're just talking about like pure like directing, like, has he directed a film before?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, maybe he's directed some TV. I'm not sure, but yeah, I found the whole thing just like very, very. It was like funny. It's like Paul Walter Hauser. Oh yes, Josh Gad. What? like a real like up and down there. And I have not always been a fan of Josh Gad's work. If I'm being honest, like I like.
Not a big Olaf guy.
Well, I was gonna say I like Olaf as much as a reasonable person could expect, I think. But like you know, I don't know if I really care that. Like, I didn't see Artemis Fowl, but I believe that his character in Artemis Fowl was one of the much derided choices of the film. And I just feel like, unfortunately, that's been, you know, a couple different cases. Like, he was LeFou in like the live action remake of Beauty and the Beast. He played one of the supporting roles in the first Hercule Poirot movie in Murder on the Orient Express. Like, I think that he's just quite forgettable in a lot of things. Granted, he's going to be behind the camera, so maybe that's for the best, and maybe he'll produce something really interesting in that respect. I just thought it was a very weird choice. I think that you're onto something there with it being like, oh, maybe Chris Farley was a sort of an icon or hero of his.
Yeah.
And maybe he has some interesting perspective to bring to that role but that story. Right. And so maybe he can provide something there, but I just thought that was interesting. Josh Gad is directing, Paul Walter Hauser is starring in this biopic of Chris Farley that's currently in pre-production. So very interesting. We'll see how that develops over time. But I think with that, that will do it for our episode 271 of Some Like It Scott. Scott, where can people find you on social media?
I'm at Scarby Dent on all platforms.
And you can find me at @sshelton2013 on Twitter, Letterboxd, Serialized. Don't forget to also check out our podcast on Patreon at www.patreon.com/mediaplugpods. If you can support us over there, we'd appreciate that. If not, that's okay. You can still find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and wherever else you choose to listen to your podcast, where we'd love it if you rated, reviewed, subscribed, shared, all that, so we continue to reach a broader audience. And thank you for listening to us chat about Monkey Man today. We appreciate that. We'll be back next time with a discussion of Alex Garland's fourth directorial outing, the much-talked-about Civil War. We hope you'll join us for that. But until then, for Scott Harvey, I'm Scott Shelton. We'll see you next time.